February 25, 1981, California State University at Long Beach. Dorothy Dethridge, interviewed by Kay Briegel.
Where were you born?
Yeah, I was born in here in Long Beach.
Really?
Right.
Wonderful. Well, where?
What was the old Seaside Hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah, and lived here all my life. Went to Lowell Elementary, Will Rogers Junior High School, and Wilson High School. And then had my first year in Mills College, my second year at UCLA, and the junior, senior, and MA degree years at Stanford. So then,
can we go back a little bit? What
yeah.
did your father do?
He was an attorney here in Long Beach. He came in just after the Signal Hill boom, and this was a good place for, it was a business area at that point in time, so it was a good place for a professional man to come. So, yeah. I have a brother, older brother, who is now an attorney also.
The wheels are turning. I'm trying to decide if his biography is in Walter Case's History of Long Beach.
Yes. I think it is. Yes, it is. Did you work for that?
For
Walter? You said if his biography is in Walter Case's.
Yes.
How are you familiar with that? You've just been looking, researching?
It published in 1927. Oh, maybe it's in one of the newer editions. There's a 1927, and there's a 1930 edition, and then there are two in the 40s.
Well, all I know is that my mom has a book.
Yeah.
That my dad is in, and it's something about Long Beach. Right. Okay. And I haven't looked at it in years.
What you thought about me if I worked on that 1927?
Oh, no. I couldn't remember. I didn't remember when it was, when it was published at all. I just know that that's one of the things that she has that I've looked at years and years ago. Yeah, that's sure. Yes, he was very active in many things here in Long Beach. Many groups, Kiwanis Club, basically.
Were you interested in education and PE when you went to Wilson?
Yes, interested since junior high school days in becoming a physical education teacher, right? And when I got out of college, we had to do another year at Stanford to get a teaching credential, and so I got my master's degree at the same time, but in the spring I interviewed many different school districts up there, and this was at a time when you could get you picked the job. The people didn't pick you. You picked the job. And I got very excited about different positions, and finally was going to teach at one of the high schools down in the peninsula area in Hayward. It was Hayward High School. And then during the summer when I was also a teaching assistant up there, and during the summer I had an emergency call from my mother that my father was ill. And so they had been back to Mayo's, and it became apparent that it was important for me to come home. So the reason I ended up in Long Beach really was that my father was ill, and I had rejected an offer to teach in Long Beach, so I went back that summer and had an appointment with Mr. Newcomb, who happened to know the family, which helped a great deal, and I explained the situation to him, and he said, you're really lucky, because we just had a position at a Stevens Junior High School of a woman who was going out on maternity leave, and I just heard about it yesterday, so I'll hire you for that position. So that's how I got into Long Beach. I taught 1 year at Stevens and then 3 years at Wilson. And then we had student teachers at Wilson from Long Beach State. And my impression, I'll say this because I think this is kind of interesting. My father had sent me a newspaper clipping of this college, Orange Coast State College or whatever it was, that time. was opening up, and this picture, this was must have been the fall of 49, this picture showed them opening up in an apartment building. And one of the pictures showed them storing the physical education equipment in the bathtub. Well, here I was, an idealistic senior at Stanford University with beautiful facilities, and I looked down my nose and I wrote my dad, who would ever want to teach in that institution? I really did, you know. I thought, ooh. And so that's the way I felt about Long Beach State. Anyway, then when I was at Wilson, I had a student teacher, and the person who came out to supervise the student teacher was a person by the name of Dr. Pat Reed, who she was not doctor then. And she said that they had a position open at the university and or the college, and that I might be interested in applying. Well, I applied, and I had an appointment with Dr. Peterson, who was president then, and it was over here in the temporary buildings, which are no longer with us, but they were temporary buildings at that point in time because there was nothing up on the hill at all. And so I had a very nice appointment with Dr. Peterson, and I also had the opportunity to play golf with Dr. Montgomery, who was the chairman of our department at that time, and Dr. Krogan and Mr. Kidd. But then I wrote the letter to Dr. Reed, and I said I appreciated the honor of being, you know, considered for the position, but that I really had some commitments and some professional commitments in organizations, and I just didn't see how I could take on a new position in addition to the professional commitments. And so I never heard anything from her, so I figured, you know, that's the end of that. I'd made my decision. And a month later, I got a call from the president's secretary. And she said, you know, we were wondering how you felt about coming out here. You know, we'd really like to offer you the job. And so much had happened in that month that had been, you know, not unhappy experiences, but a lot of problems had come up in that month. And I just said, I'll be glad to accept the position. So that's how I ended up coming out here in 1955, when there were, I think the three of us that were added to the staff that year in physical education brought us to 13 in health, physical education, and recreation, the division of health, physical education, and recreation.
I'm still curious about your education.
Oh, yeah.
How you went through three schools in 5 years.
And why?
Yes.
Well,
just briefly, if it's not.
Well, I went to Mills, and I very much liked Mills. But it was a girls' school, and I knew that if I stayed there a second year, that I would graduate from there. And I really wanted, I knew it was best for me. It wasn't really what I wanted. I knew it was best for me to have a co-ed experience. At UCLA, I had the, you know, I was, I think one of the things that a big university like that does offer is the experience to be in a sorority, so I had that type of life. And the experience of being in a very, very big institution. And then I had always wanted to go to Stanford, so I really hit, you know, my high point. My collegiate experience was then going up to Stanford as a junior and senior, graduating from there, and then having my MA degree there. I really loved Stanford. So that's why I went to the various places. I wanted to eventually graduate from Stanford. And then I got my doctorate later on from USC in physical education from USC.
Yeah, at the time that you came back to Long Beach to teach, and then you came over here, were there other people who kind of followed that same pattern from the public schools into the college?
Some. Yes, there were. There were others. The reason I laugh is that, what was her name?
Okay, that's a loaded question, I have to tell you. Because I walked down the hall past Mr. Bartlett's office.
Oh, yes. Pam Bartlett, yes.
He was a teacher at the junior high school I went to.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Ken Bartlett, and there I have through the years, there were a number, especially when we were younger. And I think probably many of them ended out here the same way I did, through the contact of a student teaching assignment. But what I'm trying to think of, there was a woman, maybe you know her name, she was an assistant superintendent of public schools for the city of Long Beach, very outstanding
lady, so outstanding, I have something like that. Anyway, she had resigned from Long Beach Public Schools, retired, and I'm sure her name is here.
Gladys Potter. She had retired from public schools. Well, in those days, in the public schools, you had these big meetings at the beginning of the year, and everybody got their hat. I mean, can't believe it now, but hats and gloves and high heels and all dolled up. You went down to the old municipal auditorium, and that was the opening meeting of all of public school teachers, and then you went to your different buildings for lunch and stuff. So the tradition was hat and gloves. So when I came out here to the first faculty meeting, and I guess the little theater was built because I kind of remember going into the little theater. But I remember sitting in the car and I looked at the ladies that were there, and nobody had on any hats and nobody had on any gloves except one person. And that one person was Mrs. Potter, who was going to be teaching part-time, and she, as I say, she'd resigned. And I thought, well, it looks like the MO here is no hats and no gloves, so off go my hat and off go my gloves. And so, and it was a very good example of the informality out here versus at that time the more the proper thing to do in the Long Beach Public Schools. So yes, there were quite a few, I think, that ended up coming out here. I think Dr. Patterson on our own faculty was teaching in one of the high schools. We used to have a dance person that was taught in the high school. So many did come from the high school, junior highs.
Anyway, I thought about going and seeing Mr. Bartlett, but I thought I might give him a heart attack.
Well, you ought to. You sure. When were you there? When were you in junior high school?
In the 50s.
In the 50s. And he was at, where was?
Lindbergh.
At Lindbergh, junior high. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that you ought to. My gosh, yeah, sure.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Back to your life.
Yeah.
Stop interviewing me. What kind of courses did you teach when you came here?
Okay, so when I came here, there were the department, the first person to be hired, I guess as a full-time faculty member, was Hermie Schwarzkopf. And he came on, he was in the original faculty in 1949. And then by 1951, they had hired, I guess in the year 1951, they hired Dr. Montgomery, who was the division chair, and then Pat Reed and Corinne Krogan. I'm not sure what other, and of course Dr. Schwarzkopf was still here. So those four people kind of really started the department then in 51. Then, as far as the women were concerned, there was a Dorothy Erickson was hired, I think, in 53, and then I came on in 55, so I was the young, the young do-all-things teacher. And do-all-things included about 9 different courses, as I remember, in those days. And I can remember we all, because we were a Department of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, or a Division of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, we taught part of the health education program was under our jurisdiction, and those were the days when everybody had to have health education, an introductory class to health education. Well, what I knew about health education was not very much, so I really had to work very hard, and the first class that I taught in health education was more of an adult, a late afternoon class, and so they were practically all older than I was. And we, in those days, gave them a health knowledge test. That was the first class period for, which pleased me. At least I had something to give to them. they took the test and I took the test. I didn't score as well as some of them, you know. So that was really, we really all worked very hard on those health education courses that we taught. We all taught them, taught social dance, taught gymnastics, taught golf, taught tennis. Just had a, oh, and then elementary, a lot of us taught in the elementary physical education program. Then taught juniors and seniors in some of what we now call analysis classes. In those days they were teaching techniques classes. But because there were so few of us on the faculty, you know, you really taught just about, I mean, you were expected to be able to teach everything. In fact, I was really supposed to be able to teach modern dance, but Pat Reed kind of realized that that was not my forte, and so I didn't have to teach that. But we really taught in a variety of areas. And then as we got more faculty, of course, we could tend to specialize more. But when I hear people talking about having two or three or four, complaining about four or five, you know, preparations, and it was not only the preparation, but it was going all the way up on the hill in the classroom sections to teach. I had a tennis class way out in the boondocks, and then I came up and had, you know, this normal amount of time to dress and to get up to teach a health education class way up the hill, and then maybe back down for another tennis class or a social dance class or something. Boy, you really raced between classes. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I guess since I know more about academic things, was that a normal load for
usually when teachers come in, yes. Especially in those days, as I say, we had a lot of classes. We offered a lot of classes and didn't have too many of us. So nine classes was standard for a 12-unit teaching load, and that's, you know, it's still really the way it works now. But usually now you're teaching in pretty much in the same areas or a grouping of areas. So it was not unusual for those of us who were new. But even the people that had been here longer, they were teaching in a number of areas. For instance, Pat Reed really started the health education area. She was a physical educator, but she, you know, kind of got the health education started. And remember, Bob Pestalozzi taught a lot in recreation as well as in physical education. So we all taught in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, in those early days, there were a few problems between the faculty and the administration. I wonder if you have any reflections on that.
You know, I'm not the appropriate one to talk on that, because I think as a about all I can, well, I was going to say, as a new faculty member, I don't think I was privy to maybe some of the problems that the faculty, longer term faculty were facing. I do remember about the only time I can remember of faculty conflict was at a time when some of our faculty got together and in a general faculty meeting made a strong statement in favor of Dr. Peterson. There was some petitions and stuff like that going around, being critical of his presidency, and I can remember that some of us talked about it, and I think it was actually Corinne Krogan that made the presentation to the faculty meeting. Now, this was still, Dr. Pete was here in, 49 to 59, so I was still a very young faculty member at that time, but I thought I really admired her a great deal for being able to stand up in front of a faculty that was not all that friendly to anybody supporting Dr. Pete. And we, certainly those of us who were supportive of Dr. Pete were certainly supportive of Corinne and her stance at that time.
you had generally positive feelings about him after your interview? And
yes, I was really felt very supportive of Dr. Pete all the way through, and I happened to, after I was here, I got better acquainted with the two, with Dr. and Mrs. Peterson, and their daughter also happens to be a friend of mine, so I felt very, I always felt I was well treated by Dr. Peterson, very fairly treated, and I felt very positive toward him. And then another interesting thing, back to the very first faculty meeting, most of the at that point in time, the faculty meetings, is this the sort of thing you want?
Yeah.
Because I don't want me to be, you know, here I'm reminiscing. But they would introduce the executive, I suppose it was, well, maybe vice president at that time, Dean Bryant, would introduce all the faculty, the new faculty. And, of course, you know, they were adding faculty like mad, so there were a lot of people introduced. And so he would introduce Dr. So-and-so, an associate professor, an engineer. We didn't have an engineering, but in education, and Dr. So-and-so received his PhD from here, and he was coming in as a professor. And, you know, I went down farther and farther in my chair, because here I was, missed somebody, and hired in as an instructor in physical education. I was really getting more and more embarrassed. And we got to my name, and Dean Bryant said, "And now this next young lady, I have had the pleasure of getting acquainted through my daughter, who had her in school at Wilson High School, and I hear such fine things about her, and I'm delighted to introduce." Well, you know, cut the whole, I was being so embarrassed about the whole thing, and Dean Bryant went over it so nicely, and I really have always appreciated Dean Bryant for making that comment. So.
But there must have been other people who hired him at that level, because the world wasn't filled up with PhDs.
No, but most, well, let me put it this way. I had 4 years' experience in teaching, and I didn't, I had my master's degree. I hadn't started on my doctorate. It was, in those days, the norm, you know, for a person with that minimum experience, Bob Pistolesi and I both came in at that time. There was a third one, a Bob Downey. All three of us came in as instructors, I think. But the people, they were hiring people such as the ones formerly hired in the department, who had maybe 10, 15, 20 years experience at other colleges and universities, and they came in as assistant professors. So there was nothing, you know, I never felt that I deserved to be higher any higher level, but it was kind of embarrassing with all of these. And just one more embarrassing situation was that first graduation. It wasn't graduation, it was when we had the service, the morning service in the church. And they walked in according to your level of what you were, your rank. And so they called all the full professors, and then they called all the associate professors, and then they called all the assistant professors, and Bob and I were, you know, just standing there. They called this Long Beach State master degree candidates. They didn't even call the instructors, so we ran and caught up at the end of the assistant professors. So, but, you know, it was one of the things about being an instructor. So what else?
When you came here, what kind of facilities were there?
Okay, we had what, when I came here, which was in fall of 55, we were in what is now the East Gym. In those days it was called the Gym. It later became the Women's Gym, and now it's called the East Gym. So we had the gym, and we had about 3 or 4 faculty offices that are there now. And we all were, and there were, I think, 3 of us in each of the faculty offices in those days. And, of course, we had good field space, so that was no problem. But the gym, and besides the gym, we had a building over here that's no longer there. It was called F1. And before the gym was built, it was F1 that they had their classes. It was the only facility they had to meet in classes, and they had their They stored their equipment there, and they stored they had their offices, and they taught there. So F1 was, I guess, the first facility, and that's now gone. It was a temporary facility for physical education. And then this gym, we're still using the same gym floor. And then I think it was in 59 that they added the swimming pool and the men's gym and the long row of offices, extended the level of offices, and then we had, in addition to that, a third increment where we added, I think the dance studio was in the, can't remember what the dance studio was, second or third increment. Anyway, there was the original facilities and two different additions to our facilities. Then we probably, I think, have one of the best set of facilities in California because of the fact we have separate gyms. And that really makes for being able to do a better program than one big facility. And, of course, we used to have a swimming pool that was in between the two gyms, and now, of course, we have the big new pool out behind the facility. But we have good facilities. But originally, it was just the one gym. And then what is now in our facility now, it's a very small locker room, one of the small locker rooms as a part of the big locker room for women. That small locker room had a partition between it, and one side of it took care of the men's students, and one side of it took care of the women's students. So, but we got along fine.
And primarily, were you training teachers?
When we started out, our program was juniors and seniors. By the time I got here, we had, what we call the general education areas, and had gone into general education. And that, of course, was a big part of our program because all the students in those days had to take physical education each semester, so that you came in and they had to take physical education as a freshman, both freshman years and or both semesters freshman and both semesters as a sophomore. So as the number of students increased, then, of course, the number of students taking physical education boomeranged. And it's one reason, I think, why we got our fine facilities, too, is that we had to take care of a lot of students. The number of students always was beyond our ability to take care of that. Our classes were always closing out, and the students would get real frantic because they knew they had to have a class. But at that point in time, I suppose, most of our students were in general ed, and then as the major grew, both the men's and the women's major, we grew into having, I think, one of the largest major, through the years, one of the largest major programs for both men and women in physical education in the state.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the subject of general education,
yeah.
Did everyone have to do that, or there's some point at which... people under 21 or under 18
years. Yeah, originally I think there might have been a 25-year-old requirement. I can't remember those requirements, but then came along not a mandate. We tried, I guess it was legislature proposed it, and we tried to defeat it, although not, I mean, we tried to retain a requirement, but we didn't think that it was a catastrophe either when we lost the requirement. So we did have a requirement initially, and then we lost the requirement. And David Gray was in recreation with us at the time, and he said, I guess he was in the dean's office, and he said, I think let's make the estimate that you will have about 60% of the students that you had before you had a requirement, and plan for about 60% of your classes, which was just a phenomenal prediction, because that's about what happened. We had a great drop initially in number of students, but within a few years they were all back. You know, the kids that really wanted to take physical education were there appreciating the fact that they had these courses to take. So for us, probably one of the best things that happened was that we lost the requirement, because then the kids came back because they wanted to be in our classes. We didn't have quite such large classes, and it's been good ever since.
But what about for the people who are in the majors then?
Well, then the majors. What happened, of course, we had some majors in the original, classes, and probably, I don't know how many majors we would have had when I came on in 55. The classes, as I remember, the major classes had maybe 15 to 20 in them, and they were maybe offered, they weren't offered every semester, the required classes. But they just increased. And then at first we just had, we did not require any special lower division classes for them. And then it became apparent that as we expanded and as the university accepted first and second year students, that we felt it would be important. Well, we found that the students weren't coming skilled enough. They didn't have enough skill in various activities. And they were coming into our upper division classes and were not as skilled as they should be. So then we instituted what we call our lower division skills classes. And this was separate from the general education program. They were for physical education majors in the same subject, same areas, but we progressed faster in our skills classes. So they developed, what?
Could you describe one of them for me, since I'm not familiar
with them? Let's take the area of individual sports. What we did, which in our dealt with badminton and tennis. Okay. Now we have general ed classes in badminton and tennis. And in a general ed class, the idea was to help the student learn how to perform, the skills, learn the skills so that they'll enjoy it. And you would stress social interaction a great deal in your classes. And, it was a learning and a sociable experience. It was one place that the students could feel and that they fit in a niche, at the university. Well, the difference with a skills class for physical education major would be that you probably expected more of the students. You probably went into the activity a little bit more thoroughly. Your expectations were higher. You stressed the skill as well as the social, but more so the skill. And instead of how we operated, whereas a general education class would meet like Monday, Wednesday, 10 to 11, that was traditional. Then in the professional lower division skills classes would meet on a two-hour basis, Monday, Wednesday, 10 to 12. For half a semester, they would specialize in tennis or have tennis, and the other half of the semester, they'd have badminton. So that's kind of the difference between those two classes. And then at the upper division level, in those days, you would talk about teaching techniques. How, when the students went out to do their student teaching or become teachers, how could they organize the classes in such a way and instruct the classes in such a way that the kids would learn the activity? So then we had the upper division analysis classes or teaching techniques classes.
So that the upper division classes were basically for teachers of physical education.
Yes, and all the way through, in the probably 50s, 60s, and 70s, the emphasis, maybe up until 75, et cetera, the emphasis has been on the teaching of physical education, because that's where the jobs were. And students came and majored in physical education in order to go out into the public schools and teach. Since probably, just using 1975 as a time frame, jobs have tightened up, and we're finding that the students are coming to major in physical education not necessarily interested in teaching at all. They just want to major in physical education. And so they're going into other areas of employment now other than the teaching. But up until about 1975, our main emphasis was on developing the best teaching major that we could develop.
What are the kinds of jobs can you go into?
Some of them are going into the services. When jobs started getting hard in physical education, some went into the service. Some are going into police and fire work because of their background and their fitness levels. They can gain employment in these areas that other people can't. A lot of our kids, or some of our kids who are interested in this area, are doing some of these fitness salons and the weight loss. They're teaching aerobic dance and all of this sort of thing and in these fitness schools. Some are into the not professional sports, but like running racquetball places. See, the whole emphasis in sports now and in jogging and all of this is creating all sorts of new jobs for people that have a background in physical education but that don't, that aren't interested in the teaching end of it. So there's a lot out there for them, a lot of different career opportunities. Some will go into the social service areas, counseling, and those areas too.
Yeah, I noticed that you're the graduate coordinator.
Yes.
When did the department start giving graduate?
Well, I guess I should trace my development here. Up until, let's see, from 55, well, to 59, I taught. And then 59, 60, I took a year off and worked on my doctorate. And got my doctorate in 64. And at that point in time, up until that point in time, we had had an intramural program for students who were interested in participating and competing, you know, but just within, we didn't really have any competition, but we would say, okay, at noon on Mondays and Wednesdays, we're going to have intramural volleyball, and the kids that would come out, we'd put them into teams, or, you know, different groups would have teams. But it was rather loosely structured, although one of my assignments was to organize the intramural program, what we had going. And then toward the very early 60s, some schools started having volleyball tournaments and basketball tournaments. And we began to think about, are we going to, as a school, get involved in competition outside the university? And this sounds amazing now, but honestly, back then, we did not have it for women. We had it for men. And so our faculty, our women's faculty, got together, and we talked about what our philosophy would be, and should we go into a competitive program. And we made the decision that maybe we should have two people, one person in charge of the intramural program and one person in charge of what we then called the extramural program. And Dottie Fornia, who is now our school graduate coordinator, was in charge of the intramural program, and this was in 63, and our first extramural director was a person by the name of Dr. Bonnie Purdy, who was there just that year, and then she went to University of Washington. And so then I inherited the extramural director's position in 64 and saw the program grow from being extramural sports to intercollegiate sports to athletics, etc. So was in charge of that program from 64 through till about 73, taking into consideration that in one of those years I was the acting chairman, so I didn't have that responsibility. Another year I was on sabbatical leave, but more or less from 64 to 73, I was in charge of the one of my assignments, one of them, I got 3 units of release time during those days, was to organize the women's and co-ed intercollegiate sports program. And we always felt that it was very important that the co-ed part of our program was as important as the women's sports. So the co-ed were the co-ed archery and co-ed fencing and co-ed badminton. Those have traditionally been co-ed sports. But we always financed them through our limited budget. And so then in 73, our department chairman resigned. And so then I became chairman of the Women's Physical Education Department, which, you know, was in that position from 73 to 78. And in 1978, the dean of the School of Applied Arts and Sciences, C. Thomas Dean, integrated the two departments, the men's department and the women's department. And we had a national search for a department chairman, and we're very fortunate to get Dr. Marguerite Clifton. So she came in as chairman of both departments in 1978, and that was the year I was eligible for sabbatical, so I took 78, 79 off, and then when I came back was then when I went into the position of coordinator of the physical education graduate program. But we've had a graduate program. I think our first degrees were given in something like 1955. We've always had a physical education graduate program.
So in the beginning, did it emphasize education?
Yes, I think it would be interesting to go back and see what our original graduate program encompassed. I'm not even sure what the emphasis was. Undoubtedly, there were, you know, a very limited number of courses offered at that time. But probably it would be more in depth in areas rather than the teaching. We never had classes like teaching techniques classes count at the graduate level, but we would do such things as curriculum, physical education curriculum, and organization administration, the secondary schools, these kinds of things would be graduate level courses. So yes, they probably were certainly influenced by our emphasis on the teacher education aspect of our program. But through the years, we have progressively emphasized more the academic field of physical education.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk more about running the extramural sports
program. Oh, okay.
What kind of things did you start out with besides co-ed badminton?
Tracing that program more directly, and I said we didn't really have much competition. I'll backtrack and say that as nearly as we can tell, the very first off-campus sort of event that we had was our attendance at a tournament was the tennis team that I had intramural tennis, and we got an invitation to go to Ojai for the Ojai Valley Tennis Tournament. So that was in 57. So tennis was the first sport that was really kind of organized and had some competition. And so we were more organized in tennis, I guess. And actually, somebody at San Diego started a league going and just got the people together that would contact various schools. Do you have, you know, would you like to play tennis on we have something going on Saturday mornings? And so it was a very a very close group of people, and I'm not even sure that we kept score of matches in those days, but anyway, we did provide opportunity for the girls to compete. Then I think the next probably on the horizon would be some tournaments that were scheduled in volleyball and basketball. And what we felt our concerns with those tournaments were that the girls had not had enough experience. I mean, they would be playing in intramural volleyball, and then we'd put together a team and take them to a tournament. Well, there was a lot of pressure in a tournament, and they weren't used to playing at that high level. So, of course, like anything else, they had had going on in Southern California, they had had a organization of students from the various colleges who used to plan play days. Now, play days was when you would take your intramural people and you'd go to some school and they would organize you into teams. Not, you wouldn't play with the people that you, from your school, but you'd, in some way they'd organize you and you'd be playing with somebody from L.A. and somebody from Long Beach, and, you know, you just all play together. I mean, the purpose was to get acquainted and play together and have fun. And there was a group of students that kind of coordinated this. Well, then gradually the faculty became more involved in this, and then gradually the faculty of the various institutions got thinking, well, you know, do we need some organization and do we need some extramural sports? And actually one of the first meetings was held here on this campus in 1963, because it was when Dr. Purdy was involved. And the faculty representatives from various schools got together. And generally, it would be the department chairman and then whoever was coordinator of sports at that particular institution. And we talked about how we should organize. And what happened was that the student group existing at that time then added faculty members to it. So